Hello, this is Richard Rycroft, as you know, because I invited you to listen to this on my blog site thing, didn't I? So thank you for clicking play and welcome to the Blue Dot Cafe. I'm going to explain that name later on. This is not an actual podcast, not yet, but I hope it will be if you think it has potential, and I really hope you're going to give me some feedback when you've listened to this. You can either leave a message on the site, or you can email me at blue.cafe@london.com. Isn't that a fantastic email address? I am so excited about this whole thing. And in that email address, blue.cafe, of course, is one word spelt with letters. There's no extra dots. Come on, it's not hard. The idea of this thing, very simply, is to put out an occasional arts-themed podcast to like-minded people around the world from my messy little flat in Gravesend. Isn't the internet amazing? Before I tell you how this all came about, let's see what it might actually sound like if it ever got off the ground, shall we? I'm recording this in August, and we all know what August means. Yeah, can you hear it? Can you hear the world's favourite and best international arts festival? It's August. It must be Edinburgh. And this is the first time for 5 years that I haven't been in Edinburgh for the festival, either as a punter or performer. And that's largely because I'm not made of money. But most of my mates are up there again, and here are some of them.
I'm David Harkus. I'm doing a show called The Working Men's Club, which is an espionage at 1:15 every day with Luke Benton, where we essentially try to recreate the essence of a working men's club. Yeah. In a show that can only be described as shambolic, where we have special guests, we have games, we have prizes, we have a meat raffle with actual meat. Yeah, we do. And anyway, it's got a lovely flyer.
Hello, I'm Holly Byrne, and my show is called The H Club, and it's at Just the Tonic Caves at 4:40, and it's about a private members club, Edinburgh's least exclusive private members club, where anybody can be a member. You meet lots of different members from the club. You meet me, I'm the owner of the club, obviously.
My name's Mark Simmons. I'm doing a show in Edinburgh with a fellow comic called Danny Ward, so Simmons and Ward, two for none, basically because there's two of us, and there's no cost to come and see us. So from the 12th till the 27th of August at the Three Sisters on the Cowgate. So come along to see some undiluted stand-up and some circuit regulars.
I'm Barry Castanola, and I'm doing Where's Barry at 7 o'clock at the Gilded Balloon. And it's a character comedy show, if you like, where I'm running late for my gig and sort of play a succession of characters filling in until I get there.
My name is Rosalind Adler. My show is called Jubilate. It's on at the Pleasance Courtyard below in the second half of August, from the 14th to the 25th. And it's on every lunchtime, 12:40. It's about a woman who is never wrong. She's a woman who knows all the answers and therefore feels it behoves her to sort out the lives of everybody else.
Potential show, the show with Pat Cahill, Cabaret Voltaire, 5 o'clock. Two men telling jokes about life.
I don't think it gets better than that, does it?
Working Men's Club.
Yeah, Working Men's Club. I guess later than that.
And I'm delighted to be able to say that at the time of recording this, those shows you've just heard about, which are already up and running, are all doing brilliantly, picking up 4- and 5-star reviews in the first few days. So really well done, everyone. They'll still be on, of course, when this thing hits my blog site. So if you are anywhere near Edinburgh, you must go and see them and tell them I said hi. And just to be clear, there is no paid advertising on this thing, all right? I'm simply telling you about stuff I like. So if I sound a bit effusive, it's because I am. But if you've never been to the Edinburgh Festival, you've got to go. You've got to. I don't know anything like it. For 3 weeks every year, the whole town becomes home to just about every art form you can imagine from all around the world. It is comedy heavy these days, but there's still more theatre, dance, poetry, whatever you can think of, more than you can shake a stick at. And there probably is someone up there right now shaking a stick in the name of art. It's not cheap. And if you're anything like me, when you get there, the temptation, of course, is to go on a good old cultural binge. But at £10 to £15 for a one-hour show, that really can hurt after a while. There are cheaper events, of course, and the growth of the Free Festival and the Free Fringe has really helped that. That's how some of the shows you just heard about were able to not charge for tickets on the door. Instead, audiences are invited to put money in a jar or bucket at the end if they've enjoyed it. I've worked with the Free Festival people in previous years, and I'm just thinking, what I might do, actually, is see if they and the Free Fringe folk would talk to me on a future podcast. I think it would be really interesting. If I'm honest, my inner hippie views these guys as the nearest thing we now have to the original spirit of the Fringe, when those 8 theatre companies famously just turned up 65 years ago at the International Festival. They weren't part of the official programme, they weren't especially welcome, but they damn well did their shows anyway. Art for art's sake, nothing better. And by the way, my opinion on the Free movement is, surprisingly to me, a bit contentious among some comedians. So I think maybe we might look into that another time too. Or maybe, if you're a comic, perhaps you'd like to send me a sound file with your own views, which I could include in a future podcast. The Blue Dot Cafe welcomes all comers. In fact, it depends on them, but more about that later. But do go and support my friends if you can, and everyone who's flogging their guts out to entertain people in Edinburgh this month. I know from my own personal experience that incredible fun, as it mostly is, and an unbeatable reunion for the performers, it is also exhausting, particularly as a stand-up. You might be on the go for 12 hours or more, performing your own show, then gigging all over town day and night, and into the next day. Then there's the obligatory flyering to get people interested in coming to see you, maybe a bit of press attention to deal with, if you're lucky. Honestly, it never ends. Well, it does, of course, in September, the come down. Why do we put ourselves through it?
People go to Edinburgh in part because it's a slightly mythical mecca of acting and creativity. There's a lovely sort of haphazard quality to it, and it's a slightly adventurous place. I saw a thing about years ago at 3 in the morning, and the entire audience was completely banjaxed. And the audience was blindfolded, and the actors would just react to whatever was thrown up by the audience, which at 3 in the morning, obviously, you hear, "You're shit." And then you hear all the actors start going, "What is shit? Are you shit? I'm shit. I'm not shit, mother. No, mother, I'm not shit. Yes, you are, child." And it would go on like that. And it was so awful. It was brilliant.
I first went up there in something like 96 or 97 with a university. We went up there and did a couple of plays up there. In fact, a really bad political farce that I'd written that got 1 star in The Scotsman. And that was on at 10:15 in the morning in a double bill with a play about cancer.
That sounds like heaven.
Yeah, it was brilliant. Yeah, it went great.
But from your previous adventures up there, what have you learned? What are you doing differently? What protections have you built in for the experience?
None. I'm making the same mistakes, same stresses, same, this will all be right, and it's a week before going, "Oh my god." I don't know why we do it, Richard, to be honest. I don't know why, because we've all got just massive egos and like the idea of having our own show, and we're none of us are big or famous enough to actually do some sort of tours. If we went to any arsons, there wouldn't be any people there, so we go, "I know what we'll do, we'll go to Edinburgh, but at least we get to see our faces on a poster, even though we might have no one coming to see your show." And I fancy just losing thousands of pounds and being depressed for a month, but apart from that, and it's a great place to be.
And I'm looking forward to hanging out with all my friends all the time, because that's all you do in Edinburgh. No, it ain't. You just sleep and do your show, and that's about it. But I'll enjoy being in Barry's show. Barry will be nice to me and buy me drinks and food. And you see, nobody does that in my show, and
Is this forming a contract here?
Yeah.
I love the feeling of being over by 1:30, really. I will have lunch in the Pleasance Courtyard, do some more flyering, and then go off and see shows. I have loads of friends up in Edinburgh this year, and I will make an effort to see the shows of the people I care about and love, and then probably be very boring and have pleasant early nights.
How many gigs could you do in a day, would you think, up there?
Well, last year I did something ridiculous, like 6 or 7, and then I just started going mental, so I just had to cut it down. But yeah, potentially you could do one every hour and a half, or, you know, if you're only doing a short spot, you could do 3 within an hour. So it just depends how proactive you are at asking people for gigs, or how popular you are, so they ask you.
And is this your first solo show in Edinburgh?
No, Richard, it ain't. It's my 5th solo show.
Your 5th solo show in Edinburgh?
Yes, Richard.
You must have learnt so much over the years. What are you doing differently now that you didn't do 5 years ago?
Oh, how... have you got 5 years worth of stuff to tell you there, Richard? I did a show in my house 1 year. I took an audience on a walk to see a Shrine of a Dead Dog in a PDSA charity shop 1 year. I had a year off last year. I learnt a lot. the year before that, I reenacted my own birth and my own death. And this year, I'm just setting up a club, man. It just seemed easier. I've learnt lots of things about where to get O2 reception in Edinburgh. I've learnt where to go for peace and quiet, top floor of Harvey Nichols, cheese board, coffee.
Every year I go up, I intend to avoid drinking, really, because I think most of the time it's just detrimental, but it's not that easy when everyone else is doing it. And I think just after the show, analysing what you've done and then making the changes rather than just forgetting about it, just take advantage of the fact that you're going to be doing the same set over and over again, just to make it perfect, really.
What I will do is there are lots of very nice, willing and eager students who will help with a bit of flyering. I take quite a lot of time before the show to get myself ready mentally, and so it's very good to have somebody else out there in the courtyard flyering away till the last minute.
Every student actor does a tableau on their own mile, holds out a flyer in a sort of weeping kind of geisha-like way.
The very first time I set foot on the Royal Mile, I saw a young, I assume, drama student flyering for a show called Toast. And he was naked apart from wearing a Toast costume.
And he was in the show called Toast.
Yeah. I never did get around to seeing the show.
Maybe you saw it.
Maybe that was the show. It would save a packet, wouldn't it? Just doing your show as a flyer on the Royal Mile.
That is a brilliant idea. That's a cutting edge show in Edinburgh. But anywhere else, it would just be some bloke being an idiot.
Standing in the street.
But in Edinburgh, it gets value and it becomes somehow significant. That's why people go.
That's why we go. Oh, God, I was about to ask what that says about us, but let's not.
No, let's not. I'm a little bit indie, a little bit geeky. Last one to sign me up. Ask me a question, try to impress you. Last one I'm like, I'm a little bit indie, little bit geeky. Last one to sign me up. Ask me a question, try to impress you. Last one I'm like, last one I'm like. See me walking around in my skinny jeans. My shoes are pointed. Kicking myself when I walk along. I'm a cheeky chappy, yeah. You know me talking about real random things. Like verbal fairly can be. Lost in space, these days. Can you help me? Can you help me, mum? A little bit indie, little bit geeky. Last one to sign me up. Ask me a question, try to impress you. That's what I'm like, I'm a little bit indie, little bit geeky. Last one to sign me. Ask me a question, try to impress you. That's what I'm like. That's what, oh, that's what I love my hair, so I wear it big. My favourite colour is green. I love beans, colour brightly. I love beans and funky now. I love sweet special jelly beans. I like pistachio nuts. I dip my toes in my porridge. Do you think I'm weird? Do you think I'm weird? I'm a little bit indie, little bit geeky. That's what's inside me, oh. Ask me a question, try to impress you. That's what I'm like. I'm a little bit indie, little bit geeky. That's what's inside me. That's what I'm like. That's what I do. What do you like? That's what I do. What do you like? That's what I do. What do you like?
tribute to the trendy young things on the Royal Mile there, yes I do mean you, by the Jellybean Rebellion, a band from Bromsgrove in the West Midlands. And if you like that song, there is an even better version of it available now as their first ever download single. They're officially launching that single at a gig at the Rainbow in Birmingham on the 6th of September. So if you're in the area, go along and let me know how it goes. blue.cafe@london.com. And Jellybean Rebellion have other gigs on their Facebook page too, so do have a look at that if you're interested. Before that, we were listening to a few voices musing on Edinburgh. And I don't think I introduced you, did I, to the guy at the beginning and the end of that. His name is Ben Mars, and he's an actor I met something like 12 years or so ago now, when we worked together in a play. Well, Ben and I got together the other day for a smoothie in Carnaby Street, like actors do. Not actually to discuss Edinburgh at all, but because he'd recently had what I think is an absolutely disgraceful experience at an audition. And I would really love to know what you think about this.
I saw an audition advertised that was a promotional film. The director was apparently he just had no money, so they couldn't pay the actors. But never mind, because it was going to be an absolutely cracking promotional film with a really interesting plot. And that's what got me, and I read it, and I thought, oh, I'd love to do that. And a very well-respected casting director as well. So I thought, bonus, I get to then meet this casting director. And I went along, and lo and behold, it wasn't a no-pay film at all. It was actually it was one of the biggest advertising agencies in the entire world. Not even London, the whole world. They're a multi-millionaire company, basically not paying actors. And not only that, they wanted to record the audition, nothing unusual about that, but what was unusual is they wanted me to sign a release form, which would then mean my audition could be put all over the internet, in whatever media they wanted, forever, without me having any say in it. So it was so exploitative that...
And you have no control over what you do at an audition.
You don't. You can be very nervous. You could really mess up.
Yeah.
And for all I know,
that shown all over the world forever.
Here, sign away whatever you do when you walk through the door, and we're not paying you, by the way.
That's,
you know,
astonishing.
It was terrible, and for a casting director to be putting people forward for this as well, I thought was pretty terrible. And the thing is, if it had been a no budget thing, you weigh that up and you look at it and you go, well, they've got no money, I'm going to do it.
We met on a job that was not free, but didn't cover my travel.
No.
No. But we do that because it was a great play that we were in together, great roles, and you have the chance to be seen by industry people who might be able to advance your career and all that sort of stuff. So there are good reasons for it.
There's good reasons for it, but it's when people start manipulating this and taking advantage of this that we have problems. Whatever that film was promoting was obviously going to be sold for a lot of money. And the thing that's really got my goat is no one is able to stop them. I didn't sign on that occasion, I just left the audition. And then I sort of felt okay, and I felt quite good that I left the audition. And then I slowly got more and more angry about it over a 48-hour period, just thinking, how can they do this? You know, actors get a bad rap, you know, we're considered to be quite egotistical. Funny enough, that isn't my experience of most actors that I've met. You know, actors love their work. You know, it's one of the best jobs in the whole world, in my opinion. Otherwise, why would I have been pursuing it for this long?
Yeah.
It just doesn't compare to any other job. It's creative. It's so much fun, I can hardly bear it. And of course, you will just run and do it for free if it's a good job.
Yeah. How then do you stop the likes of this big agency exploiting actors? We're not going to boycott free work as a body, are we?
No. That's the first layer of the problem, I think. Because I was so angry, my initial response when I was so annoyed about it was just to say we should never work for free. If we never worked for free, this just wouldn't happen. It would seem so alien that this would happen. They just wouldn't be able to get away with it. But you can't do that because, I mean, I directed a show myself and we couldn't pay the actors. But the point is, I wasn't getting paid. Nobody was getting paid. everyone was doing it because of a love of the project, and that was the payment of the job. And that's a really easy thing to exploit. The second layer of how to deal with the problem, I think it comes down to you as an individual, and actually you as a group, to realise your value without sounding too cheesy about it, to realise your value. There's, again, a funny myth that anyone can be an actor, and in many ways they can, but then not everybody goes, I want to make a living from this. And if you can't make a living from it, if you literally are just having to supply your acting work with constantly other jobs, then it's become a hobby. And then worse, it becomes a hobby for the very, for basically people who can afford it. And I think that just, I don't think that's an anti-elitist thing to say. I think it's just a truth. It would shallow the gene pool of talent. Mm. So it doesn't help anybody. And the answer to it, I think, is to have a real sense of your own worth and your work.
So how would you apply that? You recognise your worth.
Mm.
That doesn't mean you wouldn't have applied for that job. It means you'd have done nothing differently, because you dealt with it absolutely right, didn't you?
I think in that situation, well, I mean, I think I dealt with it right. Other people may disagree and say that was your chance. You know, you could have gone, been everywhere, maybe. But the fact is, I felt for me that people were getting rich off that, and it's not fair to exploit actors or any artist in that way.
You got a lot of comments on your Facebook thread when you put this up, and basically a lot of anger from other actors. Is the British acting profession just festering with fury about the exploitation? Is that what's happening?
I hope so, is the answer to that. Yeah. I really hope they are, because there's so many actors, so few work. That simple rule of economics, that the more of something is, the less value it has, completely applies here. And that's a real problem internally. I think it comes down to this. It's whether this thing of I need a job, I think, is the dangerous one. If you get into that needy place, which happens to everybody, you know, it happens to me about 22 hours a day, but for 2 hours a day it doesn't, and I go, I want a job, but I don't need a job. It'll actually make you a better auditioner as well. You know yourself, and I know, and everyone, I'm sure, who's been to an audition will know that the more you need to get the job, the worse your audition usually is.
Yeah. The need just seeps out of you into the room, doesn't it?
It does. It does. Yeah.
And I am never more successful at auditions than when I'm already working.
Yeah.
And this could be the next job.
I know an actor who goes out and she gets hungover. She's maybe a raging alcoholic, I don't know, but that's her excuse, is that when she has an audition, she goes out the night before. Like, she's so tired, she just always gets it. And I think it's a fun, I don't know, that's maybe for another
too
podcast.
Too exhausted to be nervous.
Yeah, I do. I think it's you just, that neediness thing, I think that's the problem. If you do something because you want the audience to love you, I think it will be a bad performance. But if you do something because you love the audience, and you want to, then that's a different thing. Am I being a wanker? I'm being a wanker, aren't I?
Not at all. No, you're a very wise and sage individual. Acting's hard, right? Acting's hard.
Acting.
Well, I'd rather go down a mine, personally.
Well, exactly, exactly. I'd much rather be, you know, saving children's lives, because it's much easier in the long run than being an actor.
Yeah!
Dude!
music was invented for, isn't it? To sing raucous love songs to alcohol. That was, I love that. That's Dead Amble from New York. I have no idea what Dead Amble means. I have no idea why they've called themselves that. And if I've just said something enormously rude in New York rhyming slang, I apologise. They describe what they do as make do with what you got, kind of rockin' blues country in your face, get down and buckfoot till the morning comes kind of music from NYC. Now, I got to confess, my buckfooting knowledge is not all it might be. But, oh, what a beautiful sound. Isn't that fantastic? They haven't been together all that long, and they're working on their first album at the moment. But you can find more tracks on SoundCloud. And if you go on YouTube, there's a really nice stripped down, I suppose you'd call it, version of Tennessee Honey on there. So have a look for that. And if you're anywhere near New York, actually, if you're anywhere near America, I'm sure it's worth the trip, you can find live dates on their Facebook page. Actually, I've exchanged a couple of messages with Josh Patch from the band recently, and we might be sorting out a phone chat for the Blue Dot in the near future. So I'll really look forward to that if that happens. And do you know, one of the joys of putting this pilot together has been that because I'm not knowingly going to include anything on here without the consent of the people who made it, that does mean I've been in touch with some great people lately, like Josh and Simon from the Jellybean Rebellion, and people who have just got the idea behind what I'm trying to do here. And to both of the bands, I'm really grateful that you let me use those tracks. Thank you. I had hoped to play you some Polish reggae as well this time. Polish reggae. Come on, what could be better than Polish reggae? But I haven't heard back from them yet. Hopefully because they're getting my email translated, but we'll see. But maybe you're a Polish reggae artist. Maybe you're an Iranian yodeler. I'm not fussy. Why don't you send me an MP3 to include on the podcast when it goes live? I'm serious. I am looking for contributions. I don't want this to be just my voice all the time. You could send me your original music, performance poetry, maybe comedy sketches, or something I just can't anticipate. I'll leave that with you. Anything, really. You know I'm not going to be nasty about it, and it can be as mainstream or as far from the beaten track as you like. The arts, as far as I'm concerned, covers whatever we want it to cover. And I really hope we're going to meet some exciting new people through this. Do you know, the possibilities of this podcast are endless. And this all started because earlier this year, a friend and I were asked to help someone as a favour to come up with some ideas for drumming up custom in a little coffee and cake shop they'd just taken over. It was already called the Art Cafe, and the previous owners had encouraged local painters to exhibit on their walls. You know the sort of place I'm talking about. It wasn't well located, and it was bankruptingly quiet. So we suggested things like hosting comedy or spoken word nights, maybe taking the theme a bit further and offering art-related cakes. The Picasso Gatto, that was one of mine. You can have bits of carrot sticking out at odd angles. Sweet Jackson Pollock pie covered in hundreds and thousands. I wanted them to go even further and expand the menu to include home-cooked food so they could have Francis bacon and eggs. And to widen the remit to all the arts so they could offer Quentin Crispy Aromatic Duck. And for the theatre lovers, the house special, the Pinter Roast. Any cooked animal of your choice, including the paws. That's when they asked me to leave. But the idea of an arts cafe, the sort of place where the beat poets might have hung out, shooting the breeze with their fellow travellers, that's always really appealed to me, you know. Obviously, I'm far too lazy to set up an actual business, but I don't have to now. We've got the internet. No one needs to do anything actual ever again. It's brilliant. And in this cafe, I have no rent to pay, so the coffee's on the house. Just fetch it from your cupboard and settle down with your iPod or whatever you're listening on. If you don't know me, by the way, I am really not technical or in tune with modernity at all. I have never done a podcast before. Computers scare me silly, if I'm honest. But I do like what they can do. I don't know about you, I'm pretty pleased with the sound quality of this pilot. And let's be honest, the editing can only improve with practice. But if you are some kind of podcasting pioneer, I really would appreciate any tips you want to offer me. Just assume I know nothing, because I do. blue.cafe@london.com, if you didn't already know. And why did I call it the Blue Dot Cafe? Well, I'm not new agey, all right? But this is, to some extent, about trying, within my limited ability, to put something good in the world and just seeing what comes back. I'm hoping that between us we're going to uncover interesting art and interesting people from all around the world that we'd never normally have encountered. But to bring it to the Blue Dot, have you ever seen that famous photograph of Earth taken from Voyager 1 as part of a portrait of the solar system? If you haven't, it really is worth Googling Pale Blue Dot. It shows the planet as seen from 4 billion miles away. It's tiny. Obviously it is. It's a tiny, tiny speck. And it sits in this band of light coming off the sun. If you've ever looked up on a starless night and seen the merest pinprick of light too far away really to hold your attention, that's the Earth in that photo. And it's dizzying, I think, to see just where we fit in the big picture. The photograph was taken at the insistence of NASA's hugely talented Professor Carl Sagan, who named it the Pale Blue Dot, and went on to write incredibly beautifully about it in a book of the same name, in which he discussed the role of humanity in the universe and here at home. Now, I could say more, but he says it better. So I'm going to leave you in a moment with a clip of the late Carl Sagan reading from the Pale Blue Dot. And before I do, I just want to publicly thank Anne Dreen, Professor Sagan's widow, and the president of the Carl Sagan Foundation, who, despite not currently licensing his voice or works for commercial use, has unbelievably generously allowed me to use it here. An act of kindness for which I'm unspeakably grateful. And it's the essence of where I hope this adventure could lead among those who want to visit the Blue Dot Cafe. I hope the words you're about to hear will touch you as they do me. Do have a look as well at carlsagan.com. He was an inspirational man. Thank you so much for listening. I would love to know what you think of this idea and how we might develop it. So please get in touch. For now, though, here's Carl Sagan.
From this distant vantage point, the Earth might not seem of any particular interest. But for us, it's different. Consider again that dot. That's here. That's home. That's us. On it, everyone you love, everyone you know, everyone you ever heard of, every human being who ever was, lived out their lives. The aggregate of our joy and suffering, thousands of confident religions, ideologies, and economic doctrines, every hunter and forager, every hero and coward, every creator and destroyer of civilization, every king and peasant, every young couple in love, every mother and father, hopeful child, inventor and explorer, every teacher of morals, every corrupt politician, every superstar, every supreme leader, every saint and sinner in the history of our species lived there, on a mote of dust, suspended in a sunbeam. The Earth is a very small stage in a vast cosmic arena. Think of the rivers of blood spilled by all those generals and emperors, so that in glory and triumph they could become the momentary masters of a fraction of a dot. Think of the endless cruelties visited by the inhabitants of one corner of this pixel on the scarcely distinguishable inhabitants of some other corner. How frequent their misunderstandings. How eager they are to kill one another. How fervent their hatreds. Our posturings, our imagined self-importance, the delusion that we have some privileged position in the universe, are challenged by this point of pale light. Our planet is a lonely speck in the great enveloping cosmic dark. In our obscurity, in all this vastness, there is no hint that help will come from elsewhere to save us from ourselves. The Earth is the only world known so far to harbor life. There is nowhere else, at least in the near future, to which our species could migrate. Visit? Yes. Settle? Not yet. Like it or not, for the moment, the Earth is where we make our stand. It has been said that astronomy is a humbling and character-building experience. There is perhaps no better demonstration of the folly of human conceits than this distant image of our tiny world. To me, it underscores our responsibility to deal more kindly with one another and to preserve and cherish the pale blue dot, the only home we've ever known.